The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, last 2 weeks that I've been here, I've been talking about the Four Noble Truths and the core teachings of Buddhism. And today I'd like to bring it home, in a sense, bring it in really close, and talk about the roles of breathing, the functions of breathing, meditation on the breath has, and how useful it is, and how it's a window into, or a vehicle into understanding how to live with the Four Noble Truths in our lives. Breath meditation is something which is common in many different traditions, not just Buddhism. But it had played a central role in much of Buddhism down through history. It's been one of the probably most important forms of meditation practice. And it traces itself all the way back to the Buddha. He gave some very clear, detailed instruction on breath meditation. And the records indicate or suggest that this was a key practice for the Buddha himself, that he himself practiced breath meditation, focusing on breath, being aware of his breathing. And I had a teacher in Japan who told me that breath meditation was all you needed to do to go all the way to enlightenment. It was so central to this whole enterprise, so powerful and useful. I have spent the last, I don't know how long, 35 years, I guess, accompanying my breath or being accompanied by my breathing. And it's something that has been kind of a constant through all these years of practice, not just in meditation, but also in daily life, where being aware of my breathing is something that I do a lot, and it's been very useful. Breathing has been a great, great companion, great friend for me. I hope I've been a good friend for it. And a wonderful teacher. I feel like I've learned a lot by paying attention to my breath. It's been a great support for me in my practice, and it's something that I cherish quite a bit, the capacity to be present for my breathing, feel my breathing as it's happening in the body. There's a lot of different functions to focusing on breathing. And so I want to list some of them, especially for those of you who can't imagine what's so interesting about breathing and find it inherently boring or whatever. So one of the useful things with breathing is that if you focus to experience your breathing, your attention is focused on breathing. It goes without saying. But what's important about that is it's not focused on something else. And so oftentimes our attention is focused on what we can call preoccupations. We're caught up in certain drama, certain stories, certain events in our lives, certain memories, certain planning, certain judgments, certain upsets, certain all kinds of activities of the mind that we do. Some of them are beautiful. Their mind does, and some of them are not so beautiful. Some of them can bring a tremendous amount of stress and pain to ourselves. And when you take this precious resource we have of attention and move it away from the preoccupation to something else, then it takes some of the energy away from the preoccupation, or it takes away some of the identification with it, some of the attachment that we have with it. The more fully the attention can be shifted and placed on something else, the more fully we let go of the attachment, the magnetic kind of attraction that keeps us glued to some of these preoccupations. And so and breath is something that's for most people, very easily available. You come back to the breath. It's always, pretty much always going on. You're breathing in, breathing out. And so you come in, and the more fully you connect to that breathing, lessened or perhaps even cut through some of the identification, some of the attachment with our preoccupation. It might only be instantaneous. It might not last very long. But it's very powerful, even for a moment, to interrupt the normal course of what the mind is caught up in, preoccupied with. And you shouldn't underestimate the tremendous power that it has in beginning to shift the inner ecology of the mind. If you just let your mind do whatever it wants, pretty quickly you'll be in trouble, I think. And when, maybe I shouldn't speak for you, but I know I would be. I think that if we just kind of get lost in our inner world, it ends up in a world of fantasies and desires and aversions and all that. And luckily, reality interferes a lot. You have to go to the bathroom. You walk around and you have to notice the door. There's all kinds of things you have to kind of, reality kind of keeps us connected to reality. And so that is to some degree a protection from being preoccupied, caught up in what we're concerned with. But it's not enough to do a dramatic job. And so often we need some help. And meditation practice is one of those ways that can help us to begin extracting ourselves from that tremendous gravitational pull into our preoccupations. Our preoccupations are of many different sorts, and some of them are very deeply rooted in us, having to do with some of the deepest values that we have, things that we think are most important. But what we think is most important is not maybe not what's really important. So, for example, if we think that having status is really important, then we'll operate that way. But if you cut through the status-seeking part of the mind and connect to something with breathing, it gives you a reference point to begin questioning that drive for status. But if you're just living in the world of status, it's like it can be status-seeking. It can seem such a natural activity of the mind that we think that's the way the world was built up, was to, everyone should have status. I should have status. I'm the greatest. A lot of other things. I mean, there's a lot of things that people pursue in their minds that sometimes we're fed, where we've got lessons from our society. This is what's really important. At my son's school, I think this week, there's going to be some kind of lecture by somebody who's spent a lot of time exploring and researching this topic, about how the media affects women's, girls, teenage girls' self-image for their body, and how tremendously much suffering comes on with how teenage girls are concerned with how their body looks, depending on all these images that they get and messages they get. And so that's a certain kind of preoccupation that people go to, is their body, how their body looks. And it can seem, especially when at a young age, that this is the nature of the universe, that this is how what you're supposed to be concerned about. It's kind of invisible in the mind that you're kind of caught up in this. But the more fully you can drop into something like the breathing and cut through it, then you see that that's not necessarily part of the hardware to think that way. It's software that's been added. And it's optional whether we stay involved with that software, those kinds of thoughts and activities. Since the breath is happening in a regular, rhythmic kind of way, It's easily available to come back to. And many times, usually, always, we have to do this over and over and over again. And it might seem that each instant of coming to the breath, letting go of our preoccupations, is insignificant. But it's actually, I think, very significant because it begins to soften and lessen the grip these other things have. You might not see how much it softens the grip initially, but drop by drop, as the Buddha said, drop by drop, the water jug is filled with water. Drop by drop, bit by bit, the mind begins to soften and relax its grip onto things. I think for most of us, we've spent a lifetime letting our mind having free rein. Pursuing whatever preoccupation it's concerned with at the time. And it has never been, the mind very seldom gets checked, never seldom gets any kind of, and so what we start doing with something like breath meditation is we begin offering an alternative to the usual habit-building activity of the mind. And if the habit is to create preoccupation, We might have spent 20, 30, 40, 50 years doing that. And so it takes a while to break the habit. But actually the habit is broken much faster than it was built up. And the proportion of how many mind moments you spent lost in preoccupation versus how many mind moments it takes to regain your mind, it goes really fast, the regaining part, if you just do the practice. So even though it might seem insignificant, it actually goes relatively fast compared to the other way you've been. That makes some sense? Okay. So it cuts through. It cuts through. It's very helpful. Related to this, coming back to the breathing can often be a way of leaving ourselves alone. Because if we're not caught up in our preoccupation, if we're not caught up in our judgments and our aversions and our fears, if we're not judging ourselves or criticizing ourselves or trying to engineer ourselves or make something happen within ourselves, and just kind of come back to something so relatively simple like the breathing, for the most part, we're leaving ourselves alone, or we're no longer interfering with ourselves. If you're judging yourself, I'm a bad person. Or if you are trying to have certain kind of experiences, engineer certain kinds of states, push away certain things, then you're not leaving yourselves alone. You're interfering with the natural flow, natural kind of process that wants to happen within us. And what I've found is that letting go of that, one of the biggest problems people have is the way in which they interfere with themselves. In Zen, sometimes they say it's having a head on top of your head. You know, it's the kind of direct, too many cooks in the kitchen, right, is a problem, right? So most of us have too many cooks in our brain. And so if we can just get simpler and simpler and not be so actively involved in doing so many things all the time, and just resting and being still, just being rather than doing, as they say, it allows for something else to happen that can't happen if we're always doing. One of the things that can happen is that we begin resting, because the doing is okay. It's a great thing to do sometimes, some things. But often the way some people do, it's kind of neurotic. And if all you know about life is doing, 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 then you can't really allow the heart, the mind to rest in some deep way. So by no longer interfering with ourselves, by kind of no longer being actively involved in all kinds of doings and manipulations and creating and planning and all that, we leave ourselves alone. And it's been my experience, and I hope it's the experience of other people as well, that as we leave ourselves alone more and more, the various inner mental and processes that go on tend to move towards health if we don't get involved with things. If we don't pick them up, don't try to push them away, don't try to get involved and justify them. So even something as that's very seemingly unskillful and healthy, like say murderous rage. You know, you shouldn't have murderous rage, should you? But if you can sit in meditation and relax and just allow and get out of the way of the rage, don't interfere with it, and don't get involved in it. Don't justify it. Don't get involved in the story of how you're going to, you know, do whatever you're going to do. Stop interfering with it, then it tends to move through and process on its own. It tends to unravel or dissolve or do what it needs to do. There's kind of almost like an inner intelligence that needs to happen, that is there, that allows it to happen. So not to interfere with this and allow it to take its place. It's an art to do that it takes a while to learn that, because the tendency to get involved is so subtle. So breath meditation, coming back to the breath, for the most part, is not, you know, being involved with the anger. The breath is something else. So if you can just kind of be with the breath, then the mind can leave the other thing to itself. And so there's a very, it's quite, I think, significant to discover how trustable it is to get out of the way of the inner life as it wants to kind of flow and develop. Sitting in meditation is one of the safest places to do that, Because you don't have to make, hopefully, many decisions when you're meditating. You don't have to figure out what to say to someone or what to do. Or you know, you just sit there. You're committed to sitting still, more or less. So you know you're not going to punch someone else. And so it's okay to let these energies course through us and see what happens as a result. And it isn't just difficult things that can arise, but also there's beautiful emotion states that can also come through us. And they are best, it can be very significant to allow them to move through us without interfering with them as well. To feel it, have love come up, for example, and not get involved with it, not reject it, to have joy arise, and not get involved in it, not leaning into it, but also not rejecting it, and just let it be and let it move through us. And coming back to the breath is a way of staying more neutral or more equanimous or more kind of non-interfering with the experience. So some people talk about breathing with an experience. So if there's anger or there's joy, breathe with it, meaning you stay connected with the breath where there's some awareness of the other thing going on. And by staying with the breath as you're paying attention to something else, it can be a little bit of a check from the mind getting involved and caught up in whatever it is that's going on for us. So I like to think of breath meditation as one of the ways in which we learn to leave ourselves alone. Another aspect of breath meditation is that for some people it's a wonderful object for developing stronger mindfulness and stronger concentration. There's something about the rhythm of breathing, the fact that it's kind of something, in flux, it's changing, that I think for many people it's easier to develop concentration, stay interested in it. If something is unwavering, unchanging, sometimes it can be much harder sometimes to just kind of zero in your attention and keep it focused right there. Also, sometimes when you focus on a single object of attention, especially initially people doing it, it tends to have an effect on the breathing, and the breathing tends to get held. I don't think I'll do it now, but sometimes I've done the exercise with people to have them kind of just focus really intently on some object right in front of they're sitting here. And most people find that they really zero in, hold their attention, really fixed, don't let it waver from that one spot, it affects their breathing. Kind of contracts or gets a little bit locked up a little bit. It's harder to get the breath locked up when the object you're looking at is in movement, is flowing, especially when it's the breath itself. And so if you stay with the breath and stay with the alternating sensations and the rhythm of the breathing, it tends to be a very useful object for kind of increased focus on what's here. The increased focus leads to greater attention, greater mindfulness, where we can see more clearly what's here. As we see the greater the detail of the breathing, the mindfulness becomes stronger, and that increased mindfulness then can translate into heightened mindfulness in daily life as we leave. But also, this increased focus on the breathing can also translate to increased concentration. So it's not just simply a matter of interrupting the normal identifications and preoccupations of the mind. It's also a matter of beginning to settle the attention, rest the attention on a place that's useful for it to rest on. And as the attention gets stabilized and finds rest and stability on the breath, the brain, the mind, becomes calmer and calmer, stiller and stiller, generally. And certainly concentration is a process of stability, of stilling, of calmness, that can be very, very satisfying to have happen. So the breath becomes a great object for that. It's not true for everybody. And it's very important to say that there are a small percentage of people for whom the breath is not a very good object for doing all this work. I don't know all the reasons why that might be, but sometimes there are some kind of obvious reasons. People who have had some kind of life crisis, like drowning or being choked, and so somehow they've been challenged around their breathing in some traumatic way. It can be very difficult to have them focus their attention on the breath because some of that early or some of that kind of fear gets re-triggered, and so they might go into a panic. People who are really hyper committed to controlling everything. Probably none of you, right? Can find that when they're focusing on the breath, and as soon as they focus on it, they start trying to control the breathing, and so they're trying to adjust it and control it. And if that effort to control the breath is too strong, you can't relax it, then perhaps the breathing is not a useful place to be. Sometimes it is. Sometimes even a controlled breath can be a great subject of mindfulness and concentration, as long as you don't get upset about controlling it. If you stay very relaxed about the fact that you're controlling it, then it'll all work out, usually. But then, anyway, the controlled breathing sometimes is an indication to step back and do another meditation practice. So I find that the rhythm of breathing in and out, that rhythm, it can be very soothing, but also very calls to attention to stay present there. That rhythm of breathing also, you can experience it different ways of breathing, but I tend to focus on my breathing, experience of breathing in my torso, my chest and my belly, and it's very physical, the whole experience. I'm not following the breath when I meditate, but rather, even though we say, you know, follow your breath, it's not following the breath, the air, but rather it's being attentive to how the body experiences breathing. So there's physical movement in the body, for example. There's a variety of different sensations that occur in the body as we breathe. There's, for example, if you breathe in, the diaphragm gets pushed down and the belly gets pushed out, the chest gets expanded. As you breathe out, then the chest collapses a little bit, it contracts, and the diaphragm goes up, gets released, and the stomach gets pulled in. And with that comes experiences of pressure, release of pressure, tautness, tightness, release of tautness and tightness, stretching, the release of that. There can be sensations of smoothness as we breathe in, as we breathe out. There can be sensations of feeling full. There can be sensations of kind of stillness, of stopping. Sometimes at the end of the out-breath, there can be a gap, and you kind of feel this kind of stillness there for a moment. There's a variety of things to experience and feel and get pulled into the world of these sensations. And as we experience them physically, I also find that it's kind of like a massage from the inside out. Because when I'm feeling my breath and getting kind of tuning into all the different sensations, all the different movement that goes on in my body, it's kind of like getting this wonderful kind of nourishing massage, stretch and release and stretch and release, and it's free. And it works very nicely kind of to settle, to relax different parts of the body. It's quite remarkable how much of the body you can feel gets affected physically by the oscillation of breathing in and out. You can kind of sometimes feel the pressure or the stretching or the movement way down into the groin or up into the shoulders, even down into the arms. Some people report they can feel it throughout their whole body. Each breath, there's a kind of energy or sensation that flow throughout the body as it expands and contracts or kind of does something. So that's one function of the breath, is to get concentrated. Another function of the breath is to be a teacher for us, to help teach us what is going on in our life, what's going on with us. The breath, they say, is both conscious and unconscious activity. You can have conscious control over your breathing, but it's also unconscious, done automatically. And so it seems to be a bridge between these two different worlds of what's subconscious, unconscious, and what's conscious. And it's a bridge between some of our emotions we have, our emotional life, and our physical life. And it's a bridge between being aware of to be able to becoming better aware of kind of our mental, emotional life and what goes on, a reactive life. So, for example, I'll notice how the more sensitive I can be with my breathing, the more I'm aware of a wide range of ways of breathing. So there's sometimes my breath is very soft and relaxed, open, expansive, and sometimes it's contracted. And when it gets contracted, it's an indication to me, you know, something's going on. So, for example, I might be a little bit afraid of something, concerned about something. One of my kids is balancing on the railing of our deck. And that affects my breathing. And so then I notice, oh, you know, I've gotten a little bit more contracted, a little bit worried here, and feel a little bit tight. And then I get them off the railing, and I can see my breathing kind of gets more relaxed and fluid. Driving is very interesting for me to watch my breathing as I drive, because there can be sometimes very subtle shifts, but there's all these subtle shifts that happen as I drive, my breathing, depending on what's happening. The police car pulls up behind me, and it does affect my breathing a little bit. And then if there's a sudden kind of, someone suddenly cuts me off in a way that's dangerous, my breathing changed for a few breaths after that. And so there's a lot to notice in all the shifts and changes and how it reflects back at, certainly in my emotions, but also to my reactions and responses to the world. And some of those reactions are more kind of primal, like someone cutting you off on the freeway. And some of them have to do with my evaluation, my judgments, my values, my beliefs, my attachments that I have. And so all that inner life, landscape, inner mental life can have some bearing on how we breathe. And so as we begin connecting to our breath and feeling all the shifts and changes, sometimes that's a window into this changing what's going on in our mind. One of the things that I often look at is, am I attached to something if my breathing has gotten a little bit contracted? And if I relax my breathing, or if I find that breathing, relaxed breathing is a great lubricator for the mind. Everyone should be lubricated. And so if I stay with my breathing, it's hard to get seized up. It's hard to get tight and contracted. It certainly can happen, but it's harder. It's also harder to stay there. Come back to the breath, breathe, relax. Whatever the tightness is in the breath, relax it, soften it. And then it's harder to stay caught in something if the breath is relaxed and soft. It's easier to stay caught in some preoccupation if the breath is contracted and tight. So the breath is a wonderful teacher, and I carried with me that attention to the breath in as many of my daily activities as I can as a way of checking in, knowing what's going on with me. It's very reassuring to stay with the breath, to connect to the breath, to be in touch with it. It feels very intimate, very close in, feel very present, kind of present, being present from the inside out to the world around me. In the language of the Buddha, the Pali language, the word for assurance, that's translated into English as assurance, to be assured, feel reassured, literally means to breathe easily. Isn't that nice? So when you feel reassured, does that translate into how you breathe? So you breathe in an easier way? So the breath as a teacher, so we see how we get contracted. We see how we get held. And we can see, if you pay attention to that, you see how unsatisfying it is to breathe that way, how maybe uncomfortable it is, and how it's kind of stressful, or there's stress built into breathing that way. And how when we relax that stress or that contraction, that it's more satisfying to breathe, to have a soft, open, fluid breath that kind of flows in and out, expands out in and out like wonderful bellows, is very, very satisfying. And sometimes not more than satisfying, it can be blissful to kind of be kind of just resting in the middle of these beautiful bellows that expand and contract and open and close and move through us. And so you can see right there in the experience of breathing the difference between being contracted and releasing that contraction. And in doing that, see the difference of how satisfying, unsatisfying one is and how satisfying the other is, how stressful one is and how unstressful the other is, how suffering is found in one and the release of suffering is found in the other. And that is the nature of the Four Noble Truths, is to see how there can be contraction, how there's grasping to something, thirsting for something, and how that leads to suffering, to stress, or unsatisfactory feeling. And how, if we let go of that contraction, that grasping, that thirsting, that there's we release then that dissatisfaction, that stress, and feel more satisfaction, or ease, or peace, or well-being. And so the breath, our breathing, can be a doorway, a window, into something that the Buddha called the Four Noble Truths. The truth of stress, the truth that there's a cause of that stress in our grasping or clinging, and that it's possible to release, let go of that grasping and thereby let go of that stress. The breath makes it very practical, very immediate. It makes it also not so philosophical. If you read philosophy books on Buddhism, they'll give you the wonderful philosophy of the Four Noble Truths. And that's nice if you're a philosophy major. But if you're a human, which I guess... No, that didn't come out well. I better go back and look at my mind a little bit, why it came out that way. So I apologize to all the philosophers. Now I'm embarrassed. And that affects my breathing. Anyway, in our role as humans, you know, it's very different than our role as philosophers. We're all philosophers, and we're all humans. And but rather than looking at it through the role, our role when we're philosophizing, we look at it through the role, our role as we are, as humans. It's very human immediate to breathe. Have you ever been at the deathbed of someone, watching them die? And have you noticed how interesting their breathing is? And how at times everything gets reduced to their breath? Their breath, not even yours. You know, the whole thing is their breathing. Have you ever been present at a birth and seen the first breath? It's quite something to watch the beginning of the breath, the first breath arise. Breathing is closely connected to being alive. And in many different traditions, the word for breath is also used to kind of point to something essential about what it means to be human, to be alive. So as you know, we say in English, you know, one way of, in Latinized English, we say respiration. It comes from spiritus, which also means both spirit, but also means to breathe in Latin. So when we say inspire, we say to bring in the spirit, to bring in the breathing. To expire, I think, means to also the last breath that goes out. Here at IMC, we are a conspiracy. And because conspiracy means to breathe together, as far as I can tell. And so in many languages, kind of they point to that. And one of the cute ones, or interesting ones, that some scholars have claimed is that, who knows German here? Is it Atem? Does that mean self? What's self in German? Huh? Self. Self. Oneself. Atem? Atem. What? Atom? No, no, it means Atem. No, Atem.
Are you trying to say
Atem?
To
breathe? To breathe? Atmen and breathe? Anyway, there's a scholar say there's a, because of the Indo-European kind of connection between words, that the word for self in one language and the word for breath in German, either one, I forget where to go, it has the same root in it. Anyway, the breath is very central and key. It's kind of at the heart of what it means to be a human, and to take an interest and in the breathing is to give us a chance to discover the tremendous richness, wealth really, that's found in the experience of breathing. I hope that all of you will find your breathing very wonderful and valuable to connect to live with, to come back to, and it becomes a really good friend for you, companion as you go through your life. So thank you very much, and happy breathing. Thank you all.